You're listening to the Innovation in Healthcare podcast, produced by Health Innovation Northeast and North Cumbria, proudly improving health and care for everyone. You can subscribe for more episodes and accompanying resources at healthinnovationnenc.org.uk/podcasts.
Hello, welcome to today's podcast. My name is Catherine Eden. I work for Health Innovation Northeast and North Cumbria, and my role is a communications lead, and one of the programmes I look after is secure data environment. Secure data environments, they're a kind of different way of sharing people's health and care records for research and planning purposes. So when you visit NHS services, clinicians, healthcare providers, they capture lots of information about you every time people interact with services. So that information is really, really useful for your care and to make sure you get the right care from the people looking after you. But also that information can be really, really helpful for researchers, healthcare scientists, planners. That data can be used in lots and lots of different ways and really can help us understand and learn more about what treatments work and what medication works, try out new ideas, new innovation. But being able to look at large sets of data, it's really, really beneficial in sort of helping us spot these patterns. But actually, it can be quite challenging for researchers and planners to get access to that information. And what we're hoping with the secure data environment is that we simplify a lot of those processes, and actually make that data available in one place. People who can access that information could only see it in that one place, and they'd only be able to see the bits of the information that's relevant to their particular project. We've been working with a group of public members for 3 years now, and I'm really, really pleased that we've got Roland and Violet here today. They're two of the public members that we've been working with over those last 3 years, and we're going to have a chat just about kind of the role that the public members have and what they kind of have been doing with us over the last 3 years. So it's a really, really sort of exciting piece of work that we've been involved in. I've worked with patients on and off in various projects I've worked in, but I think this is probably the one where we've really worked very, very closely together. We've co-produced lots of work. So it's really sort of exciting. And because actually they'll tell you where they don't like things. They're very open and honest with us. And actually for me, working in comms, it really kind of helps us get our messaging right and just to make sure that we put front and centre what people might be worried about and then how we can sort of address those concerns. So if you just want to introduce yourselves first, or if Violet, I can come to you first. You just want to just introduce yourself, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of why you wanted to be a public member working with the secure data environment.
I'm Violet Rook, and my background is in nursing and midwifery, but I was also doing a bit of teaching at the time. And now I'm retired, and I'm involved in lots of things to do with PPE, public and patient involvement processes. And I really wanted to be involved with the SDE when I found out about it, because I'm interested in data. I'm interested in what's going on in the world in regard to data, because data is a big topic. And it's big business, really. And I thought, well, what's the SDE got to do with the NHS? I wanted to get involved and see what was going on. And when I did get involved, I found that I was very reassured, and what the data, our data, patient data, is being used in a very safe way, will be used in a very safe way in regard to the data, secure data environment. And I found over the past 3 years that, you know, people, ordinary people, can actually have a say and have a voice in what's going on. And I think that's very vital to the security of all our data in regard to the health service and our health. So that's me anyway.
Oh, fabulous. Thank you, Violet. And Roland, would you like to introduce yourself and just tell us a little bit why you kind of wanted to come and be a public member?
Yeah, hello. So my name's Roland Finch, and I, like Violet, I'm a public member as well. My background isn't in healthcare. I apart from being a patient, we're all patients from time to time. I do have a background, however, in research, and one of the things that I always find interesting when you talk to researchers is that they're absolutely on top of their subject, and they're absolutely know what it is that they want to do. But in order to do that research, they need to have data. And two things come out of that. The first one is that they know what data they want, but they're not entirely sure sometimes where to get it from. And the other thing is that in my experience, researchers tend to talk a different language to ordinary members of the public. So it's twofold, really. One is that we need to work out where this data is coming from, whose data it is. There are lots and lots of privacy issues when it comes to your data and my data, everybody's personal data, which is data that you might have from your GP or a hospital visit or a visit to some other care provider, or even your local authority in some cases has personal health data about you. And one of the things which seems to have come around over the years is that there's quite a lot of concern with members of the public about what happens to that data, who it gets shared with, and what it gets used for. So from a public perspective, what we're looking at as public members is to make sure two things, really. The first one is that if you get communications from researchers, or if you look at research that's been done, it makes sense to us ordinary members of the public that we can understand what it is they're doing. And the second one is that that data must be dealt with in a secure way, so that it's not inadvertently shared. There's lots and lots of horror stories on the news every week about people's data being shared widely. Or I think there was a thing on the news a couple of weeks ago, wasn't there, where a whole pile of personal data was supposedly being offered for sale in China. So firstly, a reassurance from our point of view on behalf of the public that the stuff which is put into the secure data environment doesn't fall into that category. It's a system, hopefully, whereby your data is held securely. It's going to be held anonymously, and it's only going to be shared with people who are authorized to look at it. So it's not a case of coming along, researcher going to your GP and say, can I have Roland Finch's personal data because I want to do a research project and I want to have a look into it. What we're looking at here is a designed environment whereby all that data can be gathered together and held in one place. It's not sent out. This is the important thing. It's not sent out to researchers. Researchers can come and access it a bit like the reference section of your local library. So they can come and read the information, but they're not allowed to take it away. And that's quite important to us as members of the public. But moreover that, what we're trying to do is to make sure that any data which is shared is only shared for purposes which are in the public interest. The important thing for us as members of the public is that information only goes to the right people in the right format.
I think it's really interesting. You both sort of touched on the thing that always comes back with the patient and the public research that we've done, and which is done anywhere in the country, not just in our region, but it is that security. And I suppose having the public members in, you're kind of in the gang, so you can sort of really scrutinise how sort of safe things are. So I think that privacy and security thing, it is always the thing that comes up whenever we talk to members of the public. I think people just want to feel reassured that what we're doing is safe. My hope sort of working within the programme, actually you touched on it there, Roland, about actually we keep the data in the one place. We're not copying it and sharing it. Actually, hopefully what we're doing, it makes the data safer. Do you want to come back in on that one there?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I always find it quite fascinating because we share our data with all sorts of things and some people are much more concerned. It seems to be quite a recent thing, and I suppose it has to do with technology, that now you can gather large amounts of data together. And You can make money out of it. That's the reality. At one time, nobody was interested in making money out of data, and now they are. And the example that I use is that it's not so very long ago that everybody's name and address and telephone number was in a book that was delivered to everybody's house. So you've got a telephone directory where you, the example I was using was, if you couldn't remember where your friends lived, the correct address, you'd look them up in the phone book and it would give you the name and address and telephone number. And that was publicly available to everybody. But in this digital age that we find ourselves in, there's so much more data that can be gathered and there's so much more data that can be shared. And I think everybody is becoming a little bit more concerned about what that data is used for, people trying to scam you out of your money or whatever. We're in an environment where only just recently the government is talking about having a ban on social media for under 16s because they're sharing too much data. So in that scenario, we want to reassure people that certainly their personal health data is kept in a secure way.
And I think the fact is that most people, the average person in the street, trusts the authorities, trusts the NHS in regard to their data. They trust in what's happening to them. And people believe that what they're told is the truth. And the thing is that they don't really go into the fact what's happening with their data. And I think the idea is that they should be given that information. You can't really force people to take the information if they're not interested. But I think it's not just now, it's sort of in the future when various organisations might be wanting to buy this stuff. And you get these newspaper articles about various organisations that are being used in the NHS in regard to AI, for instance. And the fact is that what's going to happen in the future regard to AI and how will that data be used in a secure way. And I think people need to be told clearly what is going to happen and what is happening. And because I can see from both sides the fact that there are some people who are frightened about their data and will not give consent to their data being used. And I can see that, I can understand why, because some people have this fear that it's not just now, it's in the future and what will happen. You've got to try and protect themselves, and people can, some people have actually signed these forms. You can get one from the GP, I believe, and there's also a national form where it asks you whether you want your data to be used or if you don't, and you can say yes or no. And some people have declined this offer. But the thing is, the security environment is there for researchers to look at. They can't download it. They can't take it away and say, this is what I've got and I'm going to use that now and in the future. They can be given permission by the SDEs, and there are 7 of them, I believe, all over the country. And they're given permission when they apply to each one. They can look at this information, and it's all anonymized, and it's not, nobody knows where each individual's data comes from. And then they have to go through different regulations and different security protocols to make sure that they are doing the right thing, and they will do the right thing. And the trouble is that people don't realize this and how secure this could be. And then there's the comparison with these other organisations who we've all heard of. I won't mention the names. We don't know the processes that they go through or might not go through. And therefore, it's important that people get a clear vision of what's happening. It'll benefit them and their family in the future, hopefully, now and in the future. And also, it will be a learning curve for researchers, because researchers need to be aware of all these security aspects. And the fact that people have to be given a voice in all this, because the general public just cannot be just sit back and say nothing, because that's a dangerous attitude to have. You have to be what's called a critical friend. You have to ask questions, and ask questions which are searching questions, because otherwise your opinion is just taken for granted. That can't be, that's not a good idea at all. You have to get it out there and say something, and ask questions. And I think the secure data environment gives people the chance. And us being on this, being what's called a member of the PEG, the Public Engagement Group, we try to ask questions in regard to what is in the public interest. If it's not in the public interest, then we want it reconsidered, and we want it to be questioned more by clinicians. And we want them to think, well, would this benefit the public, this research?
I think it's really interesting, because we're sort of touching on loads of the things that do come up with members of the public. And I think transparency is really important. You talk quite a bit there about that. How this data is used currently, you don't know as a member of the public whether parts of your record have been used. So there's a lot of things that we're doing within this, and all of the secure data environments across England are doing this. It's not just us, but that we're publishing data use registers. We're saying, well, this university and these researchers have looked at this piece of data from these patients. So we're kind of making it more transparent, which I think, again, it supports trust, and it so people can see what we're doing. Anonymity, again, I think that was something that's always come up in the research that we've done. There's the public in our region are very supportive of what we're doing, but on the certain conditions. So those conditions are that we've got our public members who are scrutinising things, that people's personal details are removed, that researchers are putting things in a language that everybody understands. I think we've certainly had experience within the public evaluation group where we have had applications in some of the earlier ones where people didn't understand what the research project was about. So these are all really important issues that public members are kind of looking at and asking those questions. I think you're quite right. I mean, I think there's never been a meeting yet where there hasn't been somebody put their hand up and ask a question. All of the public members, you're fantastic in terms of the different experiences that you've had, and you look at things in different ways. So if we didn't have you working with us, we would have took things in a different direction. And I do think that the input that the public members have had have kind of made sure that what we're doing is the right thing. So it's been really, really good working with you all on developing these things.
There are two distinct aspects to this, aren't there? The first one is to say, yes, we want to be absolutely certain that the data that is held about everybody is held in a secure way and is handled in a responsible and reasonable way. And that's where the public members come in, because, to be perfectly honest, I don't want to be unkind about researchers, but they have a slightly different agenda insofar as they want to do research. And of course, the research that they want to do is intended on improving everybody's lives, but their focus is very much on the research, how they do it and stuff like that. Whereas as public members, we are the people who, in the first instance, it's our data which is being used. And in the second instance, we are the beneficiaries, I suppose, if you want to call it that, of the research. So what we want to ensure is that, first and foremost, the data is handled in a responsible way. But secondarily, and perhaps just as importantly, is that the research purposes for which it is used are meaningful and the phrase which we use is in the public interest. We're not going to allow researchers just to do research for research's sake. They may be very academically minded in some of the stuff that they do, but as a public member, we'll come along and we'll say, well, what does that mean for us? What's going to happen? What are the outputs in reality? And how is it going to benefit people? And how is it going to benefit? I know this sounds terribly grand and it's not supposed to. How is it going to benefit society as a whole? and us as individuals. So that's the bit that that I think we bring to it. The other thing, which of course is that, as I said right at the outset, researchers tend to talk in jargon and acronyms, and Violet and I and the other members of our group are the people who put our hands up and say, excuse me, could you please explain what that means in layman's terms? And it is quite a task sometimes, because the technically minded people will cheerfully look at some of these applications and say, yes, I understand completely what that means in terms of a clinical need. And we're sat there going, well, yeah, that sounds great, but we've got no idea what it means in English. So would you please translate it for us, so that when we go out to other members of the public, as we're trying to do in this podcast, and explain to people what it is they're doing, we can put it in words that everybody understands.
Yeah, I think definitely the health literacy side of things, and this is something we see within our region a lot, is that our integrated care board and others recognise, and the hospital trusts are all working really hard to make sure that the information that we give to patients, people understand, because literally it could save somebody's life if they, you know, if they don't understand information, they might be taking the medication wrong. You know what I mean? It's actually very, very important that the way that NHS and others, the way that we communicate, is understandable. We know from a lot of that work that actually the reading age in our region is actually a little bit lower than the national average. So we do need to put things in ways that people can understand.
Again, this is one of the things that the public members step in on. When we're talking about reading ages, we're not saying that anybody is less intelligent or anything like that. It's quite simply when you get a document, when you get a list of great big long medical conditions from your GP or the hospital or whatever it is, that, you know, all of us who consider ourselves to be reasonably intelligent can look at these things and say, do you know what, I don't really understand what you're telling me here. When you get a long legal document that's written in all sort of legalese words, you won't understand it unless you've got somebody to try and explain it to you. And I think that's what we're trying to say here, is that we're trying to get some of this stuff, which is put forward by researchers and saying, I want to do a research project into whatever it is. And when you actually read between the lines, you say, right, okay, but what you're actually doing, I'm trying to find a cure for the common cold or something like that, which everybody can understand. It's much easier for people to understand if it's put in language which they understand. So and especially in a healthcare scenario, if you're sat across the table from your GP and they're telling you you've got some complicated medical condition, then do you know what, intuitively you just might not want to hear that, so you kind of blank out. And it does happen with medical conditions. It does happen with legal stuff. It happens with the small print when you go and buy stuff, that you don't always read it. It doesn't mean you're incapable. It just means it's not explained as well as it might be. And that's why the public contribution is, or public member contribution, I think, is so very important to this process.
And there's also the aspect of digital inclusion, because now, with a 10-year plan and everything, everything's got to be online. And there's so many people who are excluded from that. And that's got to be, we try to acknowledge that the fact that, you know, a lot of people, the hidden minority that doesn't get the digital, doesn't, you know, for financial reasons, for skill reasons, for whatever reasons, will not be able to get online, or are afraid of getting online because of scams. People are nervous of getting involved online, but this is the way forward in regard to the NHS, in regard to the 10-year plan, and of course the NHS app is playing a bigger part all the time. I know this may be controversial to some people, but there's a lot of people in who are dealing with digital inclusion in the NHS who do not really appreciate the fact that there's a lot of people who cannot get online and who don't have haven't got the wherewithal in whatever it may be to do so. And therefore, we have to represent those people as well. And this is not just older people. This is people of all generations and of all communities and ethnicities. People need to know about what's going on in the health service. But if they don't know about it, they can't do it, can they? And if they don't know, and if the powers that be don't realise this, then they're missing out on a big chunk of society who are going to be not have their voice heard. And therefore, we need to have that aspect of digital inclusion in the secure data environment and program, and make sure those people get the message. And that's why we've got these various groups, which both Roland and I are on, in regard to the community involvement. And you, Catherine, and other members are going out and doing presentations to community groups in the various areas of the region. There's so many people who are now finding out, who probably wouldn't have known. They won't be going on the ICB website or the Health Innovation website. And, you know, how are they going to know if they don't do that?
I think that's really important what you raise around the digital inclusion. And it is that thing that we can't just assume that we've put some information on social media so everybody knows what we're doing. It is one of the tactics that we'll use, but actually we've got to put things printed out, we've got to do things in different languages, we've got to literally go out and see people to raise awareness. I mean, we did some work with like Aging Well ambassadors, and it's trying to sort of get out lots and lots of different ways so that messages do get heard. It's quite interesting that you mentioned scams as well, because I'll tell you what the number one query is when people ring the helpline. So we've been sort of sending messages out through GP practices, which I think is quite a good way of getting messages to the public, because people trust their GP practice. But the number one thing people ask is this a scam? Even when it's come from the GP practice, that's the number one. So I think we've had about 100 calls to the helpline, and I think 80 of them were people saying, is this a scam? Particularly when it's health information, because it's really, really sensitive information. So no, I think it is really important. And like you say, people need to know that they've got a choice. I think certainly from a lot of the national research that's been done, there's very low awareness around the benefit and the fact that data is already shared, it's already been used by researchers, it has done for a long time, but there's actually very little awareness of that. And I think part of our job is to let people know it's happening, let them know it's safe, let them know there are benefits to it. But actually, if they're not happy with it, that they can opt out of it. I mean, you mentioned the national data opt out earlier, so people can sort of opt out of all of that stuff if they want to. We have a local opt-out as well, so there's kind of like a double lock. I mean, anybody that's gone through the national data opt-out won't be in the secure data environment. And we do check. We certainly check when the data comes in from the providers to check, is anybody opted out? Because obviously they don't come in. And then again, it's checked again in case in that time in between somebody's opted out. So when that data is made available to a researcher, that we check again to make sure that nobody's opted out. So we really kind of respect that, those choices that people make. And I think you're always going to have that percentage of people, it varies somewhere between sort of maybe 5, maybe even 10% of people will opt out. They just don't want anything to do with it, because there's just that lack of trust, not just in our organisations, but in others as well. And I think there's definitely a spectrum of how people sort of trust NHS services. And as you sort of widen that circle to other types of organisations, that level of trust changes. So, and it might change over people's lifetime as well, that people might be more trusting at a particular point in their life and become less trusting at other points in their life. And we're all kind of on a different spectrum, really, in terms of where our comfort lies with this stuff. So just thinking about the work that you've done as public members, kind of what's been the thing that you've kind of enjoyed the most?
By trying to reassure other members of the public that there is significant public involvement in the design of some of these things and the way that they're put together means that hopefully people have a bit more trust as to what's going on, it's not just them and us, it's not just the scientists and the data handlers and taking all your data and sharing it willy-nilly. What they're trying to do is, with our help, is to put together a system where your data is collected properly, it's held securely, it's only shared with the right people in a way that's going to benefit everybody, as I said before, in the public interest. And by raising that awareness and by going out to groups in a whole variety of formats, because let's face it, some people are comfortable with digital stuff. Some people, generally the older members of society, are less comfortable. But it's always been the same with technology. When new technology comes along, there's some people who just go, that's not for me. So going out and talking to them individually and spreading the message in other ways is very, very important. Those are the bits that I quite enjoy, which is to say, you know, I found this out. Did you know this was happening? Were you aware of that? Is there anything that you would like to say on it? Because we're in the position where we can actually take that back to the people who are at the coalface, if you like, doing all of this stuff and representing your views. And that is vitally important. That I think is probably the most important thing that we do as public members, is to bring a different perspective and wherever possible to bring the perspective of our individual communities, whatever they might be. And taking them straight to the people who are actually doing the work of constructing the secure data environment and also doing the research afterwards. So we can say to them, you know what, that's a really good project, but this isn't going to work because. Or it might be better if you try doing it in a slightly different way, because our experience is that that's how you engage people better. So. Yeah, you know, it's not all sitting in a quiet room somewhere playing on your computer. It's more about involvement, social involvement, and getting in touch with people and sharing their views, reassuring them where possible in a way that sometimes, I think, as Violet said, that there was a time when you'd go to your GP and your GP would tell you something and you would come away and say, well, he told me something. Or she's told me something. I'm not quite sure what it means, but I'm going to go along with it because I don't really understand it. We're now in a situation where people do ask questions a lot more. Some of them informed, some of them less informed. And what we're trying to do is to close that circle and make sure that everybody's got the right information.
I agree with Roland. Basically, yes, but at the same time, I think it's good that people have the option, because therein lies security, you might say. It's security for the secure data environment as well as society, that people do have an option. Because if they didn't have an option, that wouldn't be a very comfortable situation to be in, I don't think. So, yes, I'm all for encouraging people and giving people information. In fact, that's what I do all the time, in every way. And I'm involved with lots of different organisations and things that try to get the message out there. But at the same time, I think having the opportunity to say no is also important, because otherwise we have a 1984 situation, and I don't want that. It's very comforting to know about what's going on in regard to what's going on with data, to what's going on with research, what's going on with the National Health Service, and be able to have a part in that, and to be able to actually ask questions and to be involved with the applications and whether they're in the public interest and defining what's the public interest. The PPI involvement in the secure data environment is vital, as it is in lots of these applications that may come to the SDE. For people to do research, because when people are involved in research, up until sort of about 10 years ago, they didn't realise that PPI should be part of the process. And now it's now considered that by most people that it is, but there are still one or two researchers who are not, who haven't got around the idea of public and patient involvement and how that can be influential in their research. But majority have, and I think that's good, and it must continue, and it's vital for the SDE.
It raises an interesting point that I'd only just thought of, which is to say, yes, Violet and I aren't the only public members involved with this particular project. There's 9 or 10 of us, shortly to be expanded to a few more. And the thing that I always find interesting when I come along to meetings is that, perhaps unsurprisingly, we don't always agree. We've got a dozen public members in a room, that doesn't mean that they're all representing the same part of the community. And we have disagreements, of course, which we deal with in a friendly way, of course we do. But everybody has a different perspective on some of these things. And that I think is the vitally important thing, that the more perspectives you can get on what's being done, surely the better for all concerned. So you start off with a researcher or a research group. They have a quite narrow view of what they want to achieve, and then as you go out to more public members, then you'll find that you get a different range of views, a different set of thoughts, which might steer them in a slightly different direction and hopefully improve the outputs for everybody.
I think that's a beautiful place to end as well. I think around the diversity that, you know, I mean, the more voices we hear, the more representative we are of our public. And it is around sort of, sometimes it might be a challenge to hear from some communities, but we've absolutely got to get in there and test how people feel about this. We can't just assume that everybody is okay. That we've always got to sort of treat people with that respect, and give them the information. We're not trying to influence or persuade people, but we just give them the information. These are the facts, and then enable people to kind of make their own choice. I think what's been good for me with the public engagement that I've been involved with so far, I've not had anyone go, oh, give me that opt out now. But actually people have, well, you know what I mean, maybe took that information away and thought about it. They may have opted out later. Absolutely, they're right. And I think when you have programs where people can't opt out, it makes people more suspicious. It doesn't lend itself well to that trust and transparency that obviously we're trying to achieve. So we'll leave it there. But thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really, really interesting to sort of hear your views. And that's it. Thank you very much.
You have been listening to the Innovation in Healthcare podcast, produced by Health Innovation Northeast and Northumbria. If you'd like to find out more about secure data environments, you can visit our website at Thank you for listening.